The time for talking is over.
The match clock showing 4 hours and 12 minutes.
Thibodeau lobs him. And gets
it. Going to have a short for him inside in. Murray, they are running.
Got it! He's got it! What's the smash like? It's good! It's good from Porter!
Sits it back. An ace out wide!
And Arena Sabalenka collapses on Rod Laver Arena.
And it is 10 of the absolute best for Novak Djokovic.
G'day everyone and welcome to the AO Show with me, John Huvenaz. Excitement is building as the tours converge on Indian Wells this fortnight, but not everyone will be there. Here's what's coming up. The big winners from Djokovic's withdrawal from Indian Wells.
You want your world number one to be there competing, but it also opens up new opportunities because the world number one ranking is on the line again.
Aussie number one Alex de Minaur on the give and take of professional tennis.
It hasn't been the easy road, but a lot of hard work and sacrifice, you can do beautiful things in this life.
And honouring the original nine on the week of International Women's Day.
I remember all of us asking each other really like, is this something you're really willing to do? Think about if you never can play again.
That's all ahead on the AO Show. From the Middle East to Mexico, here are this week's headlines. Daniil Medvedev makes it 3 titles on the trot in Dubai and 14 consecutive wins since his Australian Open exit. Alex de Minaur returns to the world's top 20 after winning his 7th career title in Acapulco. Donna Vekic completes her remarkable comeback with a drought-breaking title win over Caroline Garcia in Monterrey. Marta Kostyuk records a breakthrough title in Texas, dedicating her win to victims of the war in Ukraine. And Novak Djokovic withdraws from Indian Wells, unable to secure a visa exemption for unvaccinated foreigners. Well, joining me today on the round table are Viv Christie and Lee Rogers from Australian Tennis Magazine. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us, John.
Well, I understand there's another edition of the magazine in the works at the moment. What's this one all about and when does it hit newsstands?
So, we are working on our April and May edition now, so which will hit newsstands in early April. And the theme of this particular magazine is opportunity. So there's lots of players seizing opportunities at the moment, you would say, including Alex de Minaur, who, as we know, won his biggest career title over the weekend, is in great form. We were lucky enough to chat with him earlier today and he'll be our cover star for the magazine.
And other stories you'll be covering, Lee?
We're also looking at the rise of men's tennis in China, US college pathways and how players are really thriving, and some of the rising stars of the game, including Marta Kostyuk and Yuri Lehechka.
Oh, very nice. Yes, we'll be having a chat about Marta as well here on the round table. But you mentioned Alex de Minaur. He's the talk of the town from an Australian perspective. He'll actually be joining us on the AO Show shortly. And he's now back to Australia's number one with 6 Aussie men in the ATP Top 100 League.
Yeah, Alex is really flying the flag. He's back to number one, overtaking Nick Kyrgios this week. And he becomes only the second Australian to win an ATP 500 title in the last 15 years, which is a great achievement.
In 15 years, that is some, I mean, it's sort of remarkable that we haven't had more in that time.
I mean, it's hard to win titles at that level. It just shows, you know, like what Alex achieved over the weekend is a fantastic result.
Yeah, and such a humble athlete and is very comfortable leading the way for Australia, such a patriot as well.
Yeah, he's very proud to be in that position. He wants to be a role model to young players here in Australia, and I think that's a position that he holds very well.
So he took the title in Acapulco. Over in Dubai, it was a player who 6 weeks ago was packing his bags after a straight sets exit in the 3rd round of the Australian Open. But since then, Daniil Medvedev has been unbeaten and won now 3 titles in a row, Lee.
It's an amazing story. Yeah, 15 wins in a row. He's improved his ranking from number 12 back up to number 6. And he also beat Djokovic, snapping the 20-match winning streak that Novak was on. So pretty impressive numbers and performances from Medvedev. You'd have to consider him the favourite for Indian Wells now, even though he's never made it past the 4th round there. But, you know, with Novak out, Nadal out, Alcaraz under an injury cloud, it sort of looks like Medvedev's title to lose.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. I think he's almost coming in without pressure as well. He lost early, I think it was maybe 2nd or 3rd round to Gael Monfils last year. So I feel like he will come in without any kind of feeling like he's got any pressure on him there as well.
So it's all starting to click, isn't it, for the AO22 runner-up. Has he really turned a corner now, do you reckon, Lee, and exercised those demons of a year ago?
It's hard to argue otherwise. You know, three titles in a row, and he had quite a few top 10 wins in there as well.
Four, I think.
So he's playing well, and he's winning titles. He's winning finals again. So it looks like, yeah, he definitely has turned a corner.
I think at the Australian Open in 2022, I mean, obviously it was a great tournament for him. Who wouldn't want to get to a final? But there were also maybe a few demons after he lost that final to Nadal. So, you know, maybe now that he's been back and played another Australian Open, he's sort of putting those difficulties behind him and, yeah, can sense a new chapter.
And he's definitely showed throughout his career, he's a player that thrives with confidence. And when he's winning matches, that's when he's like at his most dangerous. So
absolutely. Interesting fact about Medvedev, he's won 18 career titles in 18 different cities.
Yeah, that would have to be getting up there in terms of most titles won without having ever replicated.
Open era record, I believe.
Yeah, that's what I understand as well. First here in Australia.
So, Lee, you mentioned his top 10 wins over this incredible unbeaten period over the past 6 weeks or so. He won't actually have to worry about facing Djokovic at Indian Wells because of the news that Novak is withdrawn from the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing for the sport. Like, you want your world number one to be there competing. But it also opens up new opportunities because the world number one ranking is on the line again. Carlos Alcaraz can regain the world number one ranking if he wins the Indian Wells title. And Stefanos Tsitsipas is also a chance if he performs well over the next couple of weeks as well.
Yeah, it's kind of that feeling of you never know who's going to step up and grab that opportunity as we keep talking about. We saw Taylor Fritz do it last year in Indian Wells and what a season he ended up having after winning that title as well. So I feel like there's lots of really talented men who could step up.
Well, let's have a look at the women's now. And one player who we've been very impressed by this year, quarterfinalist here at the Australian Open and continued her form, is Donna Vekic, who's claimed her first title since 2021 in Monterey, Lee.
Yeah, Donna's in amazing form. This time last year, she was ranked outside the top 100, struggling with her confidence coming back from a knee injury. And I think she sort of said herself, like, she was considering whether she had a future in the sport. And look at her now. She's won 14 of her 16 matches this season. Her only two losses were against world number 5 Aryna Sabalenka in the Australian Open quarterfinals and world number 7 Maria Sakkari in the Linz quarterfinals. So she's playing great tennis, and she's sitting at world number 23, just shy of her career high, which she achieved back in 2019.
Yeah, it's been an amazing turnaround for Donna, particularly in the last few months. You know, in October last year, she made the final of San Diego and had some really good wins there. She beat Sakkari, Pliskova, Sabalenka, and to reach the final. And yeah, and at that tournament, she also connected with Pam Shriver, who has now joined her coaching team. And something has just really clicked in that relationship. And I think Donna is in just a very positive place generally, and she's just riding the momentum.
One to keep an eye on is Donna Vekic. And Lee, Marta Kostyuk, who's someone we flagged off the top and will appear in the next edition of Australian Tennis Magazine. Emotional scenes in Texas this week for Marta.
Yeah, for sure. She was the first Ukrainian player, man or woman, to win a singles title since the Russian invasion. So lots of, you know, it wasn't just her first title. I think she was also like playing for a lot of other people, and she dedicated the victory to her country. So yeah, highly emotional scenes for sure.
So that was a win over Varvara Gracheva in straight sets. And Viv, at 20 years of age, there's still so much upside to this highly watchable, highly marketable athlete.
Yeah, she's a great player to watch. And it's funny, you mentioned her age, 20 years old. You almost forget how young she is. You know, she's done a lot in her career already, particularly here in Australia. She was the AO Girls Champion in 2017. Then in 2018, she became the youngest woman to claim main draw wins since Martina Hingis in 1996. So she's kind of got that, even though she is very young, she's also got that feel of being a very experienced player as well. So she's got a great foundation for success.
And it also goes to show like how much doubles can actually help with confidence. She made the Australian Open semi-finals in January in doubles, and now she's translating that, you know, success onto the singles court. So
it's amazing. It feels like just yesterday we first got introduced to her in Melbourne as a teenager. I think she was 15. Is that right? So that must have been 2018.
Yeah, she made the third round as a 15-year-old.
But she's really turned into a mature player now. She doesn't seem like the teenager that we, and nor should she, but she doesn't seem like the teenager that we first was introduced to.
She's very comfortable in the spotlight, I think, as both a player and as a personality. I think she's kind of, yeah, she's, it doesn't overwhelm her, and I think that holds her in really good stead. And we've seen her win, you know, this first title in Austin, and I think, you know, that will also translate to wins at bigger tournaments as well.
So let's then have a think about Indian Wells from a WTA perspective.
Oh, that's a tough question. I mean, Iga is going to be tough to beat, defending champion, and obviously played well in the Middle East. But there's also a lot of other players playing well as well, so it's hard to predict what could happen.
Well, if it's not Iga, I would sort of, my mind goes to some of the American players who tend to play particularly well on home soil. Mm. So Jess Pegula perhaps, Coco Gauff, I think we could perhaps expect a big result from Coco. Those are a couple that stand out for me.
Paula Badosa typically plays well Indian Wells. She won the title 2 years ago, semi-finalist last year, and she slipped down the rankings a bit. So, you know, this might be a time for her to really sort of step up and regain some momentum. Maria Sakkari is another one to keep an eye on. She was a finalist last year, and it'll be interesting to see how she handles that pressure and whether she can go one better this year.
Yeah, it'd be great to see either of those women step up and have a great result in Indian Wells. Paula's had a tough start to the year with injury, and Sakkari, I think, really popular player. We'd all love to see her breakthrough.
Well, all will unfold over the next couple of weeks, and we will review our predictions at the end of it. But Viv Christie, Lee Rogers, thanks for joining us on the AO Show.
Thanks for having us.
And you can read plenty of great stories in the upcoming edition of Australian Tennis Magazine, available via tennis.mag.com.au. Well, Alex de Minaur is in many ways the embodiment of all the qualities Australians admire in their athletes. This week, he's added a seventh career title to his swag and has moved back inside the world's top 20 players. And the 2023 Acapulco champion joins us now. Alex, welcome back to the AO Show.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be back.
Congratulations on behalf of, well, all your Australian fans, including my wife, I must say, who's fallen in love with you over the past few months.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. It means the world to me.
What's been the most pleasing thing about your game lately, particularly given the circumstances in which you won the final and the semi?
I think everything's sort of just clicking, you know. Ultimately, you put in a lot of hard work behind the scenes, and it's always amazing to see the results. You don't always get them, so you have some tough weeks here and tough weeks there, but it seems like everything's kind of clicking. I'm having a great year, and things are kind of looking up. So I'm very happy with where my level's at and what I'm being able to accomplish on the tennis court.
I'll take your mind back to the start of this summer when you came up with your new mantra. It might have even been a New Year's resolution from memory, but we spoke in Sydney about you coming up with your mantra. First of all, tell us what you wrote on your bag and how's that been working out for you as a new focus point for you?
Yeah, so at the start of the year, I started with a New Year's resolution, which was don't worry, be happy. A bit like exactly like the song. So I wrote it on my bag and kind of it's something to kind of keep on reminding me to just stay calm, stay cool, stay collected, that things are going to go my way, that I put in the hard work. And now it's all about just enjoying the moment and enjoying myself on court.
And back inside the top 20 again, and also importantly, the number one Australian. What does it mean to you to be the top player in your country and also inside the top 20 in the world?
Oh, it's an incredible honour to be the number one in the country. And look, more than anything, I just want to be someone that, you know, people, you know, look up to, can want to be reflected in myself and can see, you know, that if you put in the hard work that, you know, you can get the results, right? you know, it hasn't been the easy road by any means, but look, a lot of hard work and sacrifice, you can do a lot of beautiful things in this life. So I'm very happy to be in the position I am right now.
Wonderful attitude, Alex. Well, this episode is the first installment of a new segment that we want to introduce. It's called What We All Should Know About Alex Demenor, But No One's Bothered to Ask Yet.
Okay.
Are you up for a few left of field questions?
Yes, hit me.
All right. So who or what did you want to be before you wanted to be a tennis player?
I wanted to be a firefighter, but I think that's literally every eight-year-old's dream.
Yeah, I think the options are firefighter, policeman, that's about it.
Yeah, any of them, but that was me. If not, then later in life I was, you know, I loved nothing more than the TV show Suits. So, you know, I wanted to be a lawyer, wanted to be Harvey Specter. He was the coolest kid around. So, but yeah, those are probably my two things if I wasn't a tennis player.
Well, fighting fires with a nickname like Demon sort of goes hand in hand. Just on that nickname, who is actually responsible for it and what do you think of that nickname?
Well, actually responsible for it is one of my old coaches called Ben Pine. A long time ago, it kind of was to do with kind of my speed a little bit. It was a play on words with my surname. I always had a kind of a longer surname, which was hard to pronunciate and get right. So it kind of worked and I went with it ever since.
What can you tell us about your hometown in Spain? What was special about it?
What is special? I think it is one of the most chilled out places there is. In fact, I'm pretty sure it holds the record in Europe for being the driest town or city in the whole of Europe, because it just never rains.
Is that right?
Yeah. You might have to fact check that, but I'm pretty sure I've heard that before.
Yeah, we'll get on to that. We'll get our research and development team to have a look into that. Here's a scenario. Leighton gives you a lift home from, say, practice, and he turns on the stereo and puts on Hunters and Collectors' Holy Grail. What do you do next?
Oh, you got to sing full blast every word of that song. I mean, I think there's only one scenario, and that's it. You know, that's a very special song that we almost all know off by heart. We sing it when we win a Davis Cup tie, and it's a very special song.
Yeah, and for our international listeners, check it out, Hunters and Collectors' Holy Grail, a classic. What's the weirdest thing you've ever posted on social media?
What's the weirdest thing I've ever posted on social media? Weird. I don't know. I think if you post something weird, you kind of get crucified in this day and age. So I think I've kind of restrained from that. Weird. Actually, maybe a couple of years ago here in Indian Wells, I got given a demon emoji costume, and I posted a picture with me wearing that. So
I have not seen that, but I'll be sure to check it out.
Yeah, make sure you scroll down the feed. You'll find it.
Yep, 2020. Aside from tennis, what is the one skill you could possibly make a career out of?
I'm going to go... Hey, Donna.
How's it going?
All good. I'm just doing an interview. I'll be here. Sorry.
G'day, Donna. Thanks for joining us on the AO show.
Donna is our beautiful host lady here in Indian Wells, so we're very thankful. What is one thing? I would have to do something to do with sports. I think being outdoors is what I love. I love anything to do with sports. You know, I would say golf, but I'm probably kidding myself. There's a lot of hours that need to go into that to get remotely close to making it a profession, but that would be my dream, probably.
There you go. Are there any other sports you're half decent at?
As a kid, I used to play football, soccer, you know, but yeah, that's probably about it.
If you could have only five ingredients in your pantry or fridge, what would they definitely be?
Well, anything that's unhealthy. I mean, I've got a very bad sweet tooth, so it's probably got to go be, you got lollies there for sure, you got Tim Tams, you got any sort of, yeah, biscuit, chocolate, donuts, like.
All sweet things.
Yeah, all sweet things, yeah, just for a rainy day. There's nothing, I think, that makes you feel better than, you know, a little cheat day.
I shudder at what would happen to your athlete's body if that became your sole diet.
Exactly. So there's a lot of restraint that goes on every day for me to kind of stay the way I am.
Who is your favorite cartoon character as a kid?
I might have to go for the cliche answer and just say Speedy Gonzalez.
That's great, and actually worked really well with the whole Spanish thing too.
Yeah, exactly.
Give us an impression of Speedy doing his catchphrase.
Oh, I don't think I can do it. I'm just, I'm all about the speed. You know, that's where I see, I resemble myself with Speedy Gonzalez, just the speed.
Isn't it something like, arriba, arriba, andale, andale?
You did it better than I did.
There you go. I don't know what it means. What's the translation?
Well, it's basically like, here we go, let's go. Like, basically, I'm on my way.
Maybe you could adopt that on court.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that should be my new catchphrase on court.
It would be awesome. Like, from a marketing perspective, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, look, I'll think about it.
All right. Going back to the sweet tooth thing, here's another scenario. You're at an ice cream shop ordering a double scoop. What two flavors are you choosing?
Very easy. Banana, number one, and dulce de leche, number two. Now, for those who don't know what that is, it's very similar to caramel, that flavor.
Yeah, that works really well. It sounds like a bit like what a banoffee pie would be like in
quite similar. I think those two flavors go perfectly together.
Hey, what's the worst fashion faux pas that you've made in your career, be it on court or off?
I think one year at the Next Gen Finals in Milan, we got to go to the Dolce & Gabbana store, and we decided to just put on the most outrageous outfits that we could come by. And I think I did a pretty good job at having a pretty outrageous outfit. So that's actually on social media too. So you can probably find that.
What did it look like?
An explosion of color. Let's just say that.
Nice. I'll look that one up too. Hey, if you were given a week off playing and training, what would you spend your time doing?
Depends where I am, but I would be driving my classic cars along the beach and just taking it easy, soaking up all the rays of sunshine that I could, and probably spending a lot of time by the ocean.
Beautiful. Maybe have a casual game of tennis, a match of tennis. In a best of three sets against Katie, what would be an acceptable scoreline?
Oh, that is a great question. You know, we've hit together a couple times, and we play this game called Targets. So essentially we each put like a cone on our side of the court, and we hit down the middle or cross courts and kind of drill and see who can hit each other's cone more often.
Yeah.
And I'm yet to beat her. So
really?
Yes, it's tough. She's pretty happy about that. So
wow, she's a dead eye.
Yeah, she's good at targets, I'll give her that.
But what do you reckon in a best of three set match? What's a good scoreline?
If I get the win, that's a good scoreline right there.
Which actor would you like to play you in a biopic about your life?
Oh, I got asked that recently, and I thought any of the Hemsworths. Not because I particularly look like them, but I just think, geez, they're great actors. Why not?
That's a good answer, and they'd get the accent down pat, I think.
Yeah, they might just get it.
Which other player on tour makes you the most nervous to speak to?
Oh, the most nervous to speak to. I think it used to be probably Roger, just because I had so much admiration for him, and I've, you know, grown up watching him play and idolizing him. So it's always been kind of a surreal experience to be able to engage in conversations with him.
Yeah, wonderful. And what? And finally, what are you most grateful for about being a professional tennis player?
I'm grateful for what the sport has been able to give me. Give me, my family, also the fact that I'm able to do what I love every day of my life, essentially. You know, not a lot of people can say that their job is their passion. So I'm very fortunate to be able to enjoy it.
Very considered answers. That concludes the inaugural installment of what we all should know about Alex Demenor, but no one's bothered to ask. Thanks for playing along, Demon.
No, it was my pleasure.
And we'll look forward to catching up on the AO show, hopefully later in the year. Who knows, maybe with another title or two under your belt.
That would be very nice.
In the week the world observes International Women's Day, we thought it fitting to honour the legacy of a group of players who paved the way for the formation of a women's professional tennis tour. In 1970, the original nine, comprising Billie Jean King, Valerie Ziegenfuss, Julie Dalton, Christy Pidgeon, Jane Peaches-Barkovich, Kerry Melville-Reed, Nancy Ritchie, Rosie Casals and Julie Heldman, entered a women's-only tournament in Houston created by Heldman's mother Gladys in protest of the uneven distribution of prize money between men and women at other events. The Virginia Slims Invitation, as it was known, was the genesis of what 3 years later would become the Women's Tennis Association, which today comprises more than 2,500 players from more than 100 countries competing for almost $150 million in prize money each year. This is its story.
Another match point for Mrs. King. That's it. Very well-deserved win for Mrs. King. Played beautiful tennis.
Game, set, and match. Mrs. King, 6-1, 6-2.
I'd already decided I wanted to be number one a long time ago as an 11-year-old. But I didn't see how it was going to happen because I didn't have any money. And most of the players were in the same boat. We were all just barely making it. We got $14 a day as an amateur. I mean, per diem. And of course, I always wanted to make the sport pro. In 1964, I got a call from Bob Mitchell, who was so wonderful to me and paid for my way down here. And this is back in the amateur days, everyone. We weren't making any money. When he asked me, I was so thrilled because I knew all about him. He said, "You probably don't know me." I said, "Oh, I know you. You've helped Margaret Court." And I said, "What can I do for you, basically?" He said, "No, I want you to come down here. I'll get Merv Rose to coach you. And we'll get players to hit. Don't worry, you'll stay at my place." And I was just in shock. When I put down the phone, I just went and told my mom and dad. I screeching and running around the house and saying, "Bob Mitchell called. I have a chance to go to Australia. I can't believe it." And that changed everything. It started the dream. I could really start dreaming about being number one in the world and helping the sport do better. And I was just, oh, it was so exciting. We were in Houston, and Gladys Heldman was the publisher of World Tennis Magazine at the time. And of course, because she's the publisher, she knows all the CEOs. But she did a tournament for us in Houston, got sponsorship. She said, "I can't pay you." I said, "Well, can you pay us a dollar each? Because it's just as binding as $1 trillion, isn't it?" So she said, "You'd do it for that?" I said, "Absolutely." We all couldn't wait. We decided that we would give up our careers for the future generations. I remember all of us asking each other, really, like, "Is this something you're really willing to do? Think about if you never can play again." And we decided we didn't care.
I didn't really understand how hard they had to fight and how close they came to it not happening. If they hadn't have taken that chance, and don't forget, they could have been banned from playing Grand Slam tournaments. I mean, Billie Jean, best player in the world, could have been banned from her national association. Kerry Melville-Reed, you know, Julie Dalton, two Aussies, stood up there, could have been banned.
And here are the three things that we wanted for the future. Any girl born in this world, if she's good enough, will have a place to compete. Number two, to be appreciated for our accomplishments, not only our looks. And number three, most importantly for us, was that we wanted to be able to make a living. And that's what we wanted for the future generations.
was a perfect lob from Mrs. King.
She set the tone for equality in women in sport and women in tennis particularly for a number of years, and she's someone that I've always looked up to, what her and the original nine did back years ago for equality in our sport.
Tennis became, you know, the top female sport worldwide, and I think that we owe a lot to them, and otherwise we wouldn't have been here playing these big tournaments, earning good money.
Every time a girl or woman receives money from tennis, it goes back to that day when we signed the $1 contract.
Well, the original nine truly paved the way for each and every one of us that play the sport now. So we can only thank them and be appreciative of the hard times and all that they sacrificed for us to be here today.
We are so grateful that they start this thing, and we try to continue that as well as good as we can to also show how good women's tennis is.
The original nine 50 years ago is the reason that we have a tour today. And I think they hold the most significance, because to be able to make such a big leap of faith and be so confident about it and want to not only do it for them, but for generations and generations ahead of them, it's really mind-blowing and super inspiring.
Every time I see a player get money or they'll show a big check or something, how much, I go, yes.
That's all for this week's episode of The AO Show. Join me again next week for the latest tennis news, views and interviews. Before we go, happy birthday to Marjana Lucic-Baroni, Belinda Bencic and Coco Gauff. Three women who've made wonderful contributions to our sport. You can get in touch with me via ozopen.com/listen or email theaoshow@tennis.com.au. Take a moment to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you like our content, please leave a rating and review so more fans can discover The AO Show.